Hare Krishna. Welcome back to the Nectar of Instruction. We are today going to complete the third text, Utsaha Nishchaya Dhairya Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat Sangatyagat Sato Vritte Chadbhir Bhakti Prasidhyati. So till now we have discussed till Tat Tat Karma Pravartanat. So last class we discussed about patience. How we have to practice bhakti patiently, knowing that just as in cultivation, the results come in its own due course. When a woman conceives, the conception takes its own course. We cannot accelerate it artificially. Then we discussed Tat Karma Pravartanat. We elaborately discussed how Srila Prabhupada's statement that neglect of the devotional, the regulative principles can destroy bhakti. So in that we discussed how the masses are the opium of religion, in the sense that in order to be populistic with the masses, there is the problems that first surface in religion. Religion becomes diluted, contaminated, and perverted. So now we'll move on and discuss about Sangatyagat Satovrittehe. So it's interesting that some things are revealed not just by what is stated, but in what context it is stated. So, for example, in the Brihannaradya Puran, when it is talked about the chanting of the holy names, it is said that Hare Nama, Hare Nama, Hare Nama. So, three times the name of Hari comes, and then Eva Kevalam. That is also an emphasis. You could say fourth and fifth emphasis if you want, and Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva, Nasti Eva. So that is three more emphasis. So in a sense, there are 8.8 times this is emphasized. So it's difficult to conceive how in a single sentence the same point could be made more emphatically than this. If one message is to be given, this is given in probably the most emphatic way in which a person could give that message. So once we understand this point, nastyeva, nastyeva, nastyeva gatiranyata. So like that, when we see something repeated, that repetition need not necessarily indicate carelessness in speech or incoherence. Especially when it is coming in a sacred book, then it means there is a profound meaning over there. And that profound meaning involves a lot of things. So here, when we see the Sangatyagat coming, earlier we had seen that in the previous text, Rupa Goswami had made the same point in a different way. What had he made the point there? There it was the point of giving up bad association. So now same point is being said over here. Sangatyagat. So actually speaking, giving up bad association is considered to be a means by which one can advance in devotional service. So having bad association will cause destruction of devotional service, and giving up bad association will cause the development of devotional service. So what does this imply? This simply implies that actually this is such an important principle that Rupa Goswami considered it fit to be repeated twice. So the double repetition serves its own purpose. It reminds us that it is a cardinal principle which cannot be neglected. Now, we discussed in the last time when we discussed about bad association, how bad association can influence us in terms of desires. It can pollute our desires, it can pollute our intelligence, and it can pollute our faith. So similarly, good association can purify our desires, it can strengthen our faith, and it can clarify our intelligence. So like that, it works both ways. So in where all the other points are being talked positively, utsaha, nishchaya, dhairya, these are positive do's. So why within a positive list, a negative point is brought about? So, utsaha, nishchaya, dhairya, tat tat karma pravartanat, and satovrutte. All these are positive points. But within that, sangatyagat. That a negative point is brought about, sangatyag. Giving up bad association. Why is such a point given? Because this is such a cardinal point that just by giving a bad association, the negative desires that keep coming inside us will decrease and we will become more open to positive spiritual desires. So, you can consider that we are souls. We are small units of consciousness and we are present in this vast material world. And this is filled with souls like us, but all these souls are contaminated by material consciousness, material desires, and we are all interacting with each other. So this interaction produces many, many material desires. And as those material desires get produced more and more and more, the result of that is the spreading, expanding of material existence. So when one wants to minimize one's material desires, there are two ways in which material desires come. One is from inside, from our own memory from the past, and the other is from outside, from the culture. So now those which come from inside, we have to individually fight. That means we don't nourish them, we don't cherish them, but we fight them and curb them. And those which come from outside, that also we have to minimize them. So one of the most powerful ways of minimizing bad association, bad the contamination due to negative desires, is to avoid those people who are the carriers of those desires. So this is not so much looking down at materialists, and I am pure, you are impure, and because you are impure, I won't associate with you. This perspective is not based so much on moral superiority of ourselves over others. It is based on a simple and essential understanding of spiritual health. I have been trying to recover my spiritual health, and if somebody is infected, it is not that person is necessarily lower than me, but that person's infection shouldn't come to me. So therefore, I have to protect myself. So when we avoid non-devotee association, that doesn't mean that we have to look down at non-devotees and we treat them as if they are lower than human beings. No, we have to respect everyone. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu said we should respect even a tree. A devotee respects even an ant, what to speak of a human being. So certainly human beings need to be respected. But more important is that we recognize that we have to protect ourselves. When a patient is sick in an infected area, or a patient is in an area, a person is in an area where there is an epidemic, then the patient, that person, who may or may not be a patient, that person has to be careful that careful so that the infection doesn't come upon him or her. So how will that take care be taken? That will be by the practice of caution. So one has to be cautious, okay, that some people are infected, I have to keep a safe distance from them. Similarly, we have to protect ourselves. Naturally, we may say, why should we not feel moral superiority? No, I am superior to them. If they are fallen, I am not. Actually, if we look in our hearts and privately, we'll recognize that we ourselves are also fallen. The only difference is that we have been given a process by which we can raise ourselves from the fallen state. And maybe we have risen ourselves a little bit. And that's how we have come to a particular state now. So the important point is to recognize that we are all trying to heal ourselves. And whatever is favorable for our healing, we have to do. So if we look at the healing metaphor, then utsaha, nishchaya, dhairyat, we discussed how one has to have faith that the medicine will cure me, enthusiasm to take the medicine, and patience that, okay, it's not that I can expect the healing to happen overnight. So I had to be patient enough for the treatment to take its course. Then utsaha, nishchaya, dhyatattat karma pravartana. So following the regular principles means the doctor may say that these are the things they have to do, these are things you have to avoid. So especially when the things to avoid are told, they have to be followed. Then when we discussed earlier about how spiritual life can be practiced at different levels, that means, you know, the standard should be that if a person has diabetes, it's best that the person doesn't take sugar at all and just focuses on taking medicines and healthy food. But if the person is unable to give up sugar, then it shouldn't mean that the patient should not be allowed any treatment only. If you're going to eat sugar, we'll not treat you at all. Doctors cannot say like that. Doctors also have to accommodate and provide some system by which, while taking sugar, or so the person can take the medicine and at least stay in some semblance of health. Surely that person won't recover as well or as fast as someone who follows the treatment fully and avoids sugar entirely or minimize sugar to bare level, bare minimum. But such a person who can't live without sugar, person allowed sugar but has also told that you take the medicine. So there the point is not to cure the person but to prevent the worsening of the condition of the person and to help that person to make some minimal elevation. Similarly, some people are so materially contaminated that they cannot really approach transcendence immediately. So for such people, there is a progression given. And for them, the partial treatment may be given where they may be told that you can practice, you can just take these medicines but avoid that. So, no, we can't avoid. Okay, then at least take the medicine. Now, is that compromise? It is a compromise if the standard is not told. There is a difference between a compromise principle and a principled compromise. A compromise principle means that the principle is there and one just makes a compromise and neglects the principle. Whereas the principled compromise means that one understands, okay, this is the principle and thinks how this principle is to be applied and how if somebody is not up to that principle, then a lower level principle is brought. So a compromise principle means the principle is neglected or rejected. But a principled compromise means when a person is not capable of following a higher principle, then a lower principle is given. So, for example, in the scripture sometimes, those people who are attached to eating meat, they are given a facility to eat meat on specific days within religious regulation. They can go to a Kali temple and do that. So that is an example of a principled compromise. That means, rather than rejecting the principle of following scripture and following God, one accepts this principle, but one finds a level of instruction that is suitable for one's practice. And in that way, one advances. So that way one is able to stay within the recovery program, although one may not be on the fast part track to recovery. So if a person is not allowed, if you don't give this up, then you will not be allowed any treatment only. If the person can't take the strict treatment, the person just kicked out of the treatment, of the recovery program. So the problem is not that the slower recovery program is given, but the problem comes when the slower recovery program is not told clearly as that. If this is the level you're going to follow, it's going to take a long time for you to become cured. If this is the level you follow, you'll get cured much faster. So when that is not told, that you are going to face problems because you are not doing this properly and your recovery will be much slower, then the lower principle will become the standard principle and that is where the problem comes. So, if as long as that doesn't happen, that the lower principle doesn't become the standard principle, one understands this is a standard principle but I'm not able to follow at this level, so I have been given a lower principle, then that is not a compromise principle, that is a principled compromise. So sometimes the scriptures give us this principle compromise and that principle compromise can apply in various fields of our spiritual life. So for example, you know, those who are in the householder ashram, grihastha ashram and those in the brahmachari ashram, the amount of time, the amount of energy, the level of sadhana, the level of seva that the two ashrams provide facilities for are different. So in terms of time and direct engagement, the grihastha ashram cannot allow as much time as brahmachari ashram. But that doesn't mean that necessarily the grihastha ashram is a compromise. It is not a compromise principle, it is a principled compromise. That means one understands that my goal is still Krishna, but I cannot take this track, I take this track. And both are valid tracks within the spiritual path. So if one just says, okay, if I cannot be a brahmachari, there's no glamour in the practice of my spiritual life, therefore I will not practice spiritual life only. I go back to sense gratification. I reject the principle entirely. Then what is happening? It's not just a principle compromise. One compromises the principle entirely and that's a loss. So how to practice at what level? The acharyas are needed to tell us that. And they tell us according to time, place and circumstance. So Sangha Tyag is also a principle that has to be applied according to time, place, circumstance. How much can we avoid the association on devotees? That is not something which can be told for everyone as a standard rule. First point I said is avoiding the association of non-devotees doesn't mean that we look down upon them. Because nothing alienates people faster than the feeling that they are looked down upon by others. So when somebody looks down at us, we look away from that person. People don't want to look at that person. People don't care for that person. So we want people to care for Krishna. We want people to come to Krishna's lotus feet. And how will they come if we don't care for them? If we look down upon them, we are not really caring for them because we are not respecting them as human beings. We are not respecting them as parts of Krishna. We are not respecting them as lost souls who are potential devotees. So therefore, when we talk about avoiding bad association, it essentially means that association which is harmful for our devotion that we have to avoid. We discussed earlier about the 3 degrees. There can be devotional association, there can be non-devotional association, there is anti-devotional association. So non-devotional association can more or less be like they are people in the ignorant. Ishware tadineshu balisheshu dushatsucha. We discussed this in Isha Upanishad that the Madhyamadhikari sees the Supreme Lord as the core object of affection. The devotees, that is devotional association, that is, they see that as the source of friendship. And Balisheshu, those who are ignorant, those who are innocent, for them there is Krupa. So then there is Dushatsu, those who are envious, for them there is Upeksha. That means if we have these 3 levels, we can put Krishna outside in a different circle entirely. We try to love Krishna. But with devotional association, there is friendship. With non-devotional association, if it is innocent, then there is, we try to show mercy. We try to give Krishna knowledge. We try to be instruments for Krishna's love. And then for the anti-devotional association, one has to neglect it. One keeps a safe distance from it so that one doesn't get entangled and contaminated. Sangha Tyaga refers primarily to an anti-devotional association. The association which makes the practice of our spiritual life extremely difficult because it's a direct and sustained attack on our faith. Sometimes, of course, the attack may be intermittent and indirect, but still if there is an attack on our faith periodically, then we understand that that is anti-devotional association and we have to protect ourselves from it. So how do we protect ourselves from the anti-devotional association? That brings us to the most important point, that is by coming to devotee association. Because we are social creatures, and being social creatures, we all need association. So if we don't have an association where we can share our values, then we will have to find some other association and we'll start sharing the values of that association. As devotees, as human beings, as social beings, as spiritual beings, we all need a sense of belonging. I feel that I belong to a group whose values I can respect and whose members respect me. So if that we can find such a group whose values I respect. Okay, these people stand for this and I respect those values. And as an added boost, if those people also respect me, yes, this is a potential devotee, this is a good devotee. Yes, he's a precious member of our community. We care for him. Then when both are there, that means we care for the values that the group stands for, and one of the values of the group is that it cares for its members, then such a group is wonderful. And Srila Prabhupada established ISKCON just for creating such a group. It is a forum where people can come together and reciprocate affection, reciprocate love, and thereby go closer and closer to Krishna. So now, how do we do this in our specific individual lives? Sangha Tyag, we do it primarily by making circles of association. There are many ways. Circles of association is one way. That means, if, say, I am here at the origin, then I create a circle of my closest associates, then close associates, close friends, then I make another circle of those who are formal, cordial, but at the same time formal. Then there are, outside that, there are friends who are entirely formal. I don't talk much with them, but we don't have anything negative. And beyond that, our people with whom we have some flares coming up, some sparks flying whenever there is contact. The sparks may be direct or indirect. That means there may be open conflict sometimes, or there may be a covert conflict of values. So at such times, we have to protect our bhakti. That is the most important thing. So in the circles of association, we try to keep ourselves as close to Krishna as possible in the circle of association. So that way we stay connected with Krishna even through association. And when we have to associate with non-devotees, whether it is in a professional environment, whether it is in a family situation, whether it is in any other responsibility that one has in the world, then we should also recognize that whatever way we dress, whatever we present ourselves, ultimately we are presenting Krishna like that. Because people know that we are all the children of Krishna. So people know that, we know that everyone is a child of Krishna. And people sooner or later come to know that we are representing Krishna. So by our behavior or misbehavior, we can attract people to Krishna, or we can take people away from Krishna. Sangha Tyag means we choose the association that nourishes our bhakti, and by staying in that association, busying ourselves in that association, we don't have much time left for asat sangha, for bad association. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is talked about the importance of this principle so much, and that's why he has stated that asat sangha tyag e vaishnavachar, that the characteristic of a devotee is asat sangha tyag, is giving up the association of non-devotees. And that is what Rupa Goswami is repeating over here. Now it's interesting how Rupa Goswami led his own life. Rupa Goswami actually lived in the association of Nawab for quite some time. And that association was not on Rupa Goswami's terms. It was on the terms of Nawab Hussain Shah. And Nawab Hussain Shah was known to be quite a brutal person. At one time he had got some architects to build a magnificent palace for him. And then when the palace was done, Nawab was very happy. And the chief architect was also there, and he was praising him. "Oh, this is such a wonderful palace that you have made. I'm very pleased." So at that time, the architect said, "Actually, I could have made an even better palace." And as soon as Nawab Hussain Shah heard it, his hand went into his sword. The sword came out, chop, cut off the head of the architect. So furious, he said, "If you could have made a better palace, why didn't you make the better palace? I am the Nawab, I deserve the best palace. And if you have not made your best work, then you will never make your best work. This should remain your best work." So what he did, chopped off the head. And the king at that time was an autocrat, a dictator. Nobody could challenge. So this was the kind of person. And he was just going around on a rampage, plundering people, devastating farms, plundering whoever, and desecrating temples, persecuting the devotees also. So what did they do? Rupa and Sanatan, because they were so intelligent, so talented, that they are widely known in their community. And now what happens with conquerors is, those warriors, those kings who have that bloodlust or power lust, we could say, territory lust, those who like to fight wars, gain more power, or exhibit their power and conquer territory, that lust for blood, power and territory, normally they want to be on the move, expanding more and more. They don't like or spend too much time at one place. So they are not very good administrators. So they need people who are good administrators. And Bengal, especially that area of Navadvip and other places around Ramakeli, that was actually a place where many devotees were living. The Brahminical culture was very strong. So they were on their rampaging spree, the Muslims, for some time. But they realized there are so many temples, so many deities, so many holy places, holy people, so religiously minded people and holy people are there. What can we do about it? They decided, we cannot go about killing everyone and desecrating every temple. So then they decided to have some kind of compromise, that you should not do any public practice of religion, and you do your religion only in your home, no public practice at all. That was the rule that they had imposed, more or less. Because often these rulers were known to be so violent, so nobody dared do any public performance. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was the person who broke that curfew, that religious curfew, and started practicing openly Harinam Sankirtan. So the point which we are building up over here is that actually Rupa Sanatana Goswami were Saraswat Brahmins, very respected position in their culture at that time, and they left it all just to join the Nawab's army, and they became Mohammedans practically. Actually, when they joined the Nawab's army, he renamed them. They were named Sakar, Rupa Goswami was, and Sanatana Goswami were called as Sakar Malik and Dabir Khas. So both of them, they actually, we could say, they chose bad association. You know, the Muslim rulers, they were the worst kind of bad association, we could say, at one level. Why did they choose such a bad association? Because that was what was required for service. When they became the Nawabs of that place, when they became the ministers of that area under the Nawab, then they were able to offer a safe enclave to all the citizens, especially those who were religiously inclined. So Brahmins and Vaishnavas from various parts of the Bengal would come there, and they would, some of them would stay there also, or they would come there at least to hear Bhagavad Katha, to hear Krishna Katha. And in this way, they provide a safe enclave for the practice of devotional culture based on the principles of Krishna Bhakti. So in this case, we see that were they taking bad association? At one level, it will seem that not only were they taking bad association, but they were affected by the bad association. So much affected that they were converted. They gave up the Vedic path and became lecha, somebody might say. But here we see the profundity of the principle of association. Although they were in the association of Nawab Hussain Shah, they were not affected by that association. Why? In their hearts, they were cherishing Krishna Bhakti. And they were writing private letters, secret letters to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and begging him, please come, please guide us, we have fallen material existence. Please guide us how we can be delivered. So their heart was always in the right place. Their heart was not at the feet of the Nawab. Their heart was at the feet of Krishna always. And they were longing for Krishna's mercy through Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would read their letters and he would appreciate the sincerity. And finally, after a long time of correspondence, sometimes Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would not even respond to their correspondence. And at that time, responding to correspondence was quite messy. And now we just type an email and press a send button and tuck. The mail goes to anyone and everyone in the world. But at that time, correspondence was very difficult. You know, first of all, one has to write one's thoughts down, and then if one wants to edit it, very difficult to edit. There's no facility. You cannot do cut paste on hard paper. So you have to actually write the final draft. So that is, it makes things very difficult. So it is such a situation that they, and then even after the message is ready, one has to send someone. Because at that time, there was no technology as we discussed. So then that sender was the person who would take their messages to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu would sometimes not respond also. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu had noted their sincerity, their zeal. And when he came there to Ramakeli, he blessed them. And he got them back into the devotional fold. And he accepted, and not only accepted them as devotees, but as among the topmost of the devotees. Among the foremost of the followers of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu were the Goswamis. So what we see from this example is that sometimes circumstantially a devotee may not only be forced to stay in bad association, but actually may be forced to enter deeper into bad association. So stay in bad association means, for at that time, anybody to stay in Bengal area, anyway, devotee under the rule of Nawab Hussain Shah, and that devotee being told that you cannot practice your religion, it will be quite irritating for many people. But other people feel, yes, there should not be any public demonstration of religion. So that percentage of people who actually at that time could boldly oppose the king were nearly no one. So they offered that safe enclave, and that's a very important service for those who were trying to protect the Vedic culture, for them to have a safe enclave. So they were not associating with the king. They were associating in their heart with Krishna. And they were creating facilities and support systems by which that message can lead to many more people. and those people can also take action. And in that way, gradually the spiritual culture will be protected. So they were not in any way, we should not think, contaminated materially when they took certain decisions. We have to understand the transcendental principle. And the transcendental principle is that actually the Lord wants to take care of all of us. When we turn towards the Lord, you know, we feel, I had this counselor, but now I have gone somewhere else and now I don't have any counselor. You know, I was very happy in this group of devotees, but now I have to take another job which will put me in another group of devotees. What should I do in such situations? So there are no clear answers for this, because each situation is different and we'll have to apply time, place, circumstance. But the important point is that in all situations one can keep practicing bhakti. Even if one goes in non-devotee association, by keeping our heart in devotee association, by being determined in the practice of bhakti, we will be able to cross through the situation. So we don't have to feel lonely because we have to associate bad, avoid bad association, because we can be surrounded by devotees who are all very good association for us. That's how we move forward in our spiritual life. So now, sangatyaga satovritte shadbhir bhakti prasiddhiti. So satovritte means that actually vritti means inclination. Sata is the devotee, the transcendentalist, those who pursue sata. Satovritti means the tendencies of those who are pursuing higher spiritual knowledge, higher spiritual truth in their lives. And for those people who are pursuing such a truth, the important point is to recognize always that their desires change. Because everyone has their own kind of desires. But for those who know that things in this world are temporary, their desires change. So actually death is a guru. And that this guru of death teaches us this point, that actually speaking, sata and asata. So those who are asata, those who do not know about their eternal existence, those who do not pursue their eternal existence, they are asata. And their vritti is tamasik or rajasik. Their sata vritti means the inclination towards the higher values of life. Towards love, towards selflessness, towards honesty, towards integrity. So that is the direction in which the saints inspire us to move. And the saints actually stay at that level also. And from that level they take us up. As it is said, we discussed also, the guru is one who knows the way, shows the way, goes the way. So the guru is one who is actually the example of sata. And we try to incorporate the vritti of that sata in our lives. So how much we will be able to implement, that will depend on time, place, circumstance. For each individual it will be different. So we can't worry about what is not possible for us to practice right. Sata vritti sometimes can frighten us. Oh, how will I be able to do this? It's not possible for me. But you have to understand that in spiritual life, there are stars and there are stairs. And there are stairs which take us to the stars. Normally in life, a stair, they can just take it one floor, two floor, three floor. But if we consider stars, stars means our vritti has become sata. There is no bad vritti inside us only. Vritti is the inclination, the tendency, the default direction of the mind. So the bad vritti has gone off, sata vritti has come about. That means even when our mind is left alone, the mind will go gravitate towards Krishna. Because that's the attraction the mind has developed. Sata vritti means by associating with devotees, seeing their attitudes, trying to share their emotions, we ourselves are able to dispel a lot of misconceptions and a lot of obstacles in the path of spiritual life for ourselves as well as for others can be countered. So this is a very important principle in Upadeshamrita, that we have to follow what is the example and the inclination that is shown with satas. So in general for us, for new devotees especially, it's not so easy for us to get guidance, because even if there is a plan, that devotee who has a plan may be very busy and therefore we may not get association at the right time. So we have to be careful, and then even if we don't get association at the right time, that doesn't mean that devotee doesn't care for us. That doesn't mean that we are all alone. No, there are always devotees with us. But there are certain times when it is difficult for us to get the right association. So at that time, when we observe devotees, whenever we get the association, learn from them, so then in that sense, we just don't learn from it, then we catch it. You know, there's an English phrase, catch it. So that means, you know, somebody throws a ball and we catch it. So like that, whenever we have devotee association, if we are attentive, if we are careful, then Krishna gives us catch it. Krishna gives us insights, Krishna gives us ideas, Krishna gives us inspirations. And all these make our spiritual life richer and sweeter. So that's how there is a gradual progression in our spiritual life. The progression centers on following the incidents of the sattas. So, of the devotees, it is said in the Srimad Bhagavatam that those who do not cultivate the sattavatti, do not try to develop themselves attracted to the eternal, no matter how much they try, they will not make spiritual advancement. Parabhavastava davodabhajato yavanna jigyasata atmatattvam yavat kriyabhir manovait. So actually, as long as one's mind doesn't get attracted to Krishna, till that time, one should not try to apply such a point that, oh, unless we have become adequately purified, unless we have become adequately internally motivated, self-motivated in our spiritual life, we cannot avoid the association of devotees. Sometimes you feel, I am as advanced, no, I can practice better spiritual life. So sometimes some devotees feel that, okay, devotee association means, you know, there's so much chit-chatting happens, so much happens, so that it's better I'll leave. So actually, we have to check. You know, if loneliness were the solution, and all of us could become pure devotees all alone. It's not that loneliness is the solution. It is actually, we have to find out those devotees. Even devotee association also, different devotees are at different levels. Different devotees have different levels of commitment. And so not all devotees are equally committed. So in general, as compared to non-devotees, we prefer the association of devotees. That is sattavritti. But even in devotee association, not everybody is exhibiting sattavritti with equal seriousness. So to find out which are the devotees who exhibit their attitude of sattavritti and have their association. And in their association, our sattavritti will increase. Otherwise, even in devotee association, our asattavritti might increase. And by that, we may stay trapped in material existence, and we may not be able to make much spiritual advancement. To preclude that possibility, to avoid that from happening, we have to always try to be cautious. So by being cautious, to make sure that we are associating with those whose values we admire, whose values we would like to emulate, then by that we'll make spiritual advancement much faster than just by some random hearing from here and there. So, sattavritti. So when we study scriptures, the purpose of studying scriptures is to understand sattavritti. Sattavritti actually can have a very broad meaning. Srila Prabhupada gives a relatively simple meaning for us, but this illustrates the point that it's important for all of us to actually live according to the example of the devotees. So now vrittihi refers to the tendency of the mind. So for the vritti to get attracted to Krishna, it's important that we cultivate consciously, because it will take time. It's not that all love is developed at first sight. Actually, generally what is developed at first sight is not love, it's usually lust. Now, later on, if the people choose to unite dharmically, then some love might develop in that relationship. But initially, it's bodily infatuation. Just as we can have these artificial relationships, these temporary self-serving relationships in material life, we may have that kind of relationships even in devotional life. That means we are relating with some devotee just at the material level to get whatever we want from that person. This sort of interrelationships are not going to be of much help. They may help a little bit. They're at least better than non-devotee association, but they confuse us about what is the ultimate principle. And we see lackadaisical devotees practicing, and we see Srila Prabhupada talking about very serious principles. So then we don't know what to do. And often we err. So here in this particular contextually, Prabhupada will explain sattavritti as the practice of devotional service by looking at the examples of the previous acharyas and imbibing those examples. So the process of bhakti is eternal, and whatever we practice in this process stays with us forever. Now let us look at this utsaha, nishchaya, dhairya from another perspective. So here we see person's consciousness, a person's modes, that whatever level a person is situated at, a person has no enthusiasm and no patience and no faith, and that is ignorance. Utsaha, nishchaya, dhairya, none of them are there. A person is in super tamoguna. A person has enthusiasm but no patience. That means, but a person just does a lot, but doesn't do it for very long. Start one thing and then get bored with it and give it up. Start another thing, get bored and give it up. Enthusiasm but there's no patience. Then one needs to come to the mode of goodness. When there is enthusiasm, patience and faith, all three together, in one place, in one heart, then that heart is very well situated to rapidly move towards pure goodness. Now remember, when we're talking about faith over here, we are not talking about ordinary faith. We are talking about the kind of faith which Krishna Karga Goswami defines, Shraddha Shabde Vishwasa Kaili Sudra Nishchaya Krishna Bhakti Kaili Sarva Karma Krutai. That is the kind of faith that is required for the practice of bhakti. So somebody will say, oh, I have a lot of faith in Krishna. But what is the faith that you have in Krishna? If I unfailingly go to his temple in Mahashtami and do seva, then the next year will be very happy for me. So if that is the idea with which you are practicing bhakti, then we don't understand what bhakti is. So that way, we deprive ourselves of the fruits of bhakti. So utsaha, nishchaya, dhairya. When all three are there together, then we understand that there is a hand of God over there. And actually, the more involved over there is pure goodness. And all devotees can try to aspire to come to this level of pure goodness. And we don't have to consciously go about cultivating various skills like people do in the material life. Of course, if we have some specific specialized service and for that we have to learn some skills, that is okay. But in general, devotees don't care much, for example, for the academic study of religion, for the contemporary outlets of information like the newspapers and the movies. And if actually the devotees can connect themselves with Krishna instead of these things, then their position will be much more secure. Because without a positive connection with Krishna, one often gets dragged down by material desires. And even against one's will, one falls prey athakena prayuktoyam papam charati purushaha. That Arjuna asks, what is it that drags me away? That Arjuna, Krishna answers, it is lust only, it is uncontrolled desire. It is a desire that when we give desire too much power, then it becomes a power that makes us powerless. Let desire not become a power that makes us powerless. How is that? If we give too much thought to the desire keeps growing, 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 growing. And eventually it goes to such a point that we're just not able to take care of it. So that is the sort of final breaking point. When that happens, if we're not able to take care, then our overall spiritual life has gone off balance. So of course then we have to endeavor, pray, strive, and then we'll be able to get the situation back on track. So when there's enthusiasm, patience and faith, then we are more moving towards goodness and we are going further towards transcendence thereafter. So Srila Prabhupada also quotes this verse, Neha Abhikramana Ashosti, to indicate how the assets of bhakti are eternal. Then he talks about how the Mahatma are constantly engaged in devotional service. And Prabhupada concludes this by saying, Utsaha Nishchaya Dhera Tatkarma Pravartana, enthusiastically executing the regulative principles of devotional service with patience and confidence. So, Nishchaya and Dhairya. In this way, one can advance in devotional service without hindrance. So, the more we commit ourselves to the practice of bhakti, actually there are obstacles which prevent us from committing ourselves to the practice of bhakti. But if somehow we can commit ourselves to that practice, then that commitment is so powerful that it can overpower all our other conditionings. See, all of us have a default momentum of the mind and senses which is going downwards. And it's going downwards from where we are into matter. And the only alternative that most people know about is an alternative where it seems all very lofty. Is it practical for me? Or in some other place it appears so materialistic in some other religions. So the solution is in Krishna consciousness, that actually every person is a soul. The vision is so all-encompassing that nobody is neglected. And that's why everybody deserves Krishna's respect. And if that person has come for a confrontation, then the confrontation can be ended. But every person has a right to gain Krishna's wisdom and to be enriched by the experience of Krishna's love. So that happens by following the principles, just as every patient has a right to be healthy. There's no doubt, and the doctors cannot take that right away from the child. In fact, this whole concept of rights is so strict that if a doctor is treating a patient for cancer, and when treating the patient for cancer, the doctor writes down that, okay, you have your cancer in your left lungs, and to remove that, we have to do this surgery. Now, while doing the surgery, the doctor finds that there is a cancer in the right leg also, right heart also. So, what should the doctor do at that time? Does the doctor have the right at that time? Okay, I find the cancer here, I find the cancer here, I'll just remove the cancer from here also. Like sometimes we are deleting some files in the computer and we find some other extra files. So, tuck, we delete them also. So, can somebody do like that? Actually, according to law, one cannot do like that. Whenever a patient is undergoing a surgery, actually, a doctor needs the written statement that there is some risk in the surgery, I'm ready to take the risk. And then, if that is not possible, then the person cannot be treated for anything more than what has been offered, what has been originally offered when the relationship was formed. The same applies to the principles of devotional life also, the same hierarchy. That had he, so when we, there are multiple levels of devotees, and when we recognize that, okay, that this is our, the satavritti of this devotee is much higher, satavritti of these devotees is lower, then if I associate with those who are of higher satavritti, then by that we make much more rapid spiritual advancement. Otherwise, our spiritual advancement stays disfocused, it doesn't become focused, it doesn't become strong. So these are six principles that can help us to advance nicely. So going back to the medicine metaphor, we also understand that I have to avoid the effect, the free mixing with those people who are infected or those people who may infect me. So that's why Srila Prabhupada would urge us to minimize the association with the opposite sex. So why? It is not that every member of the opposite sex is infected by lust. If a man feels agitated on seeing a woman, that doesn't mean that that woman is necessarily infected. Actually, that person is getting infected. The woman may not have any intention of agitating the person, but just by the way she is, she may get agitate the man's mind. So then we can't blame the woman. The point is, it's not whom to blame. So sometimes when we talk about Sangatyagat, so there can be association of Mayavadis, there can be association of materialists. Bhagavatam talks about association of women and association of those who are attached to women. Now when you talk about that, it raises the question, actually in this world, 50% of the population is women, and the remaining 50% is men, and men are naturally attached to women. So if you're not associated with, if women are bad association and men attached to women are bad association, then what is left? Whom are we to associate with? So the point of this Bhagavatam verse is to emphasize that, actually the same point is talked about in Bhagavatam as well as in Chaitanya Charitamrita, and the point of this is to recognize that there is great danger. And good association is so precious and so rare that wherever we get it, we have to cherish it. So in that sense, what this verse is recommending is the association of those in the renounced order. And they who are trying to develop their attachment to Krishna, and when we associate with them, then the intoxication, the infatuation that comes because of worldly association, the associated worldly desires, decreases. So, in general, the important point in Sangatyagat, you will see sometimes verses which talk about, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu quotes a verse that actually, Sandarshinam Vishayinam Atha Yoshitam Cha Vishibhakshantu Appi Sadhu. He says, if one associates with a Vishay, a sense gratifier, then that is worse than drinking poison willingly. You wonder, how can I apply this verse? You know, if I associate with a sense gratifier, and then I'm drinking poison. But actually this world is filled with sense gratifiers. In fact, I'm also a sense gratifier in many ways. So what do I do in such a situation? So here the point is, see, every verse has a context. There's an emphasis over there. So we should recognize that there is danger. And then for functional purposes, if we have to associate, for professional purposes, we have to associate. We can't avoid that association. But, so even if there are sometimes, if you're working in an office, and there are, there is anti-devotional association over there. There are some people who just, as soon as they come together, they want to talk against God, or they want to talk against Krishna, they want to talk against Krishna's mission, Krishna's devotees. Then what if we have to work over there? We may have to work. But in such situations, we can be official, and we don't have to become emotional. Be official means be formal, be courteous, be functional, do whatever is required, but don't become emotional. That means we don't have to see the bond between people happens not just by physical proximity. It doesn't happen just by working together also. The bond between people happens by sharing joys and sorrows together. So if we are not getting into the emotions of material enjoyment with the materialistic people around us, then we're not really associating with them. So when it says that it's worse to drink, it's worse than drinking poison to associate with materialistic people, the point there is that in the association of materialistic people, we will get infected by material desires. And when we get infected by material desires, then that infection is very harmful for our spiritual life. That infection, in fact, it is said that in Visha and Vishaya, Vishaya is more dangerous than Visha, it is said. Why? Because Visha kills only for one life, whereas Vishaya kills for many lives. Visha keeps us suffering in material existence, life after life after life. And Visha actually kills by consumption. But Vishaya can destroy us by contemplation. Therefore, one has to be extremely careful. So, just by thinking about sense objects, one's intelligence can get eroded, corroded, and destroyed. So, we have to be careful, very, very careful. Now, that we don't have to be rude, we don't have to be standoffish. Standoffish means thinking that I am superior to others. But we have to be cautious. Knowing that there is an epidemic and there are people with infections, I have to protect my health. And whatever is required for their protection, I have to do. So if I have to work with people who are materialistic, well, I will work with them. Because that's what is the obligation, that's what is required. But I will not get involved in their joys and sorrows. I will not get caught up in their inebrieties. If they are going to talk about various matters which are just mundane, which are illusory, which are anti-devotional, then I will avoid that talk completely. If they are talking about non-devotional subject matters, then I might just be nominally present over there, but I will not get my heart involved in it. I will use it in Krishna's service. So, as devotees, we want to care for everyone. But we want to care for everyone because they are connected with Krishna. So, our greatest care should be for Krishna. And when we care for Krishna, naturally we care for our relationship with Krishna. We care for Krishna's feelings about us. So naturally, anything that harms our relationship with Krishna will displease Krishna. And therefore, if associating with some people is harming our relationship with Krishna, then keeping a distance from that association is important. That is helpful for us in the practice of bhakti. Without that, we will not be able to practice bhakti in a very intense way. The effect of non-devotee association is that because non-devotees are not practicing devotional service at all, when we practice devotional service, we start feeling, why am I doing this? Should I be doing this? So many people are living without this. Why am I tormenting myself? You know, chanting so many around, doing this, doing that. That's how the mind can get contaminated. So when we come in the association of devotees, we see that there are so many people are practicing and they are practicing more seriously than me. I have to practice seriously. So sangat sanjayate kamaha, through association desires develop. So by associating with devotees, and by cultivating the values that they are cultivating. So actually, sangha tyaga chato vritte. What is the what actually in a sense these are complementary. So when we avoid non-devotee association, then actually how will you avoid it? By associating with devotees. But it's not just saying associate with devotees. It is saying sato vritte. Develop the vritti of the sattas. It's not just stay in the association physical proximity of devotees, but by doing that as much as possible, but more importantly by contemplating, cherishing and cultivating the values that the devotees stand for, how they make Krishna their topmost priority, how they orient all their life around Krishna, how they center all their relationships on Krishna, and that's what we can all aspire to do. And when we do that, then bhakti prasiddhiti, our bhakti will flourish. Thank you very much. Shri Desha Amrit Ki Jai. Hare Krishna.